Last week on vacation, we were at Lake Chelan. And now, when we left Sammamish, there was concern that the Henderson Hills fire was burning there already. And then after we arrived, the Navarre Coulee fire and the Chelan Hills fires started. And there was one day that you could look out across the lake and see just plumes of smoke on the other side. And there were several days where we could see and we could hear the planes scooping up water from the lake and then flying into the hills to pour it over that burning landscape. All these fires are contained now, all three. But contained is such a strange word for what a fire leaves behind. It doesn't mean that it's gone. It just means that the flames have stopped moving. But the earth underneath has been sizzled. And now the land has to figure out what it's going to do with what is left. And our drive there and back also took us through the scar of where the Labor Mountain fire burned through last year. Now, last year's fire is this year's old news to everyone except the hills themselves, which are still working out what they're trying to do. When we were driving through, it looked fresh enough that Wren was convinced that it must have just happened right before we drove through. We convinced her we would never take her on such a dangerous path. But amongst these blackened tree trunks and this charred soil, there were small green bushes coming up. And I could even see, to my surprise, these tufts of purple flowers. And I thought to myself, these are ridiculous and stubborn plants. They're growing in the very same spot that 12 months ago was literally on fire. And it's not like anyone planted them. Unlike the grapevines and the apple orchards that decorate parts of eastern Washington, no one had plowed nice rows or delicately planted the seeds. The seeds just showed up. That's what life does when we're not paying attention. And all of this brings me, which you probably could have guessed, to our gospel reading and to a farmer. We just heard Jesus's parable. A sower goes out to sow. Some seed lands on the path, and then the birds eat it. Some lands on rocky ground, springs up fast, and then dies just as fast because it has no roots. Some lands among thorns and gets strangled, and some lands on good soil and produces 30, 60, 100-fold. And conveniently for us and for the disciples around him, Jesus even tells us plainly what this story means. The seed is the word, and the soils are the different kinds of hearers. For 2,000 years, many of us have been taught that this explanation turns this parable into a sort of internal spiritual inventory. What kind of soil am I? Am I the shallow path? Am I the rocks? Hopefully, I'm not that thorny place. Oh dear God, I really hope I am that good soil. But if we stop at that, if we stop there, there's an aspect of this parable that we miss. Now, the scholar Amy Jill Levine and others point out something that this text assumes. It assumes something we all should know, but it never says it out loud. This is a terrible farmer. Any farmer worth their salt in first century Galilee was methodical. They plowed the ground first. They cleared all of the rocks out. They pulled up all those thorns. And only then did they sow the seed carefully into that ground that was already prepared. Now, seed was expensive, so you'd be absolutely nuts just wander about flinging seeds at gravel or letting it fly willy-nilly through the air. It's wasteful. It's extravagant. But Jesus and his sower do just that. They walk around throwing seed all over the place. The path, the rocks, the thorns, and then the sower gets lucky and it actually lands on some soil that is actually ready for it. It's lavish, it's borderline foolish, and it is, as Levine says, exactly the point. Because this is what the extravagance of God looks like once you stop expecting God to be careful or stingy with love. So maybe the question was never, which soil am I? Maybe the question is, what kind of sower keeps throwing perfectly good seed at ground that is still smoking? I think about the disciples that are in this story. You know, the ones that Jesus lets in on this little secret while everybody else is left outside kind of guessing. And I remember that these are the same people with inside knowledge that will spend the rest of the gospel misunderstanding him, betraying him, denying him, basically running around confused. And meanwhile, it's those who are on the outside of that circle, the hemorrhaging woman, the centurion, the Syrophoenician woman that Jesus initially brushes off, those are the people that get it right. Their insider status doesn't seem to help them very much. And so much for deciding who counts as good soil and who doesn't. It was never our job anyway. Because I think we're terrible judges of ground. We look at a scorched hillside and we'd call it dead. Or we look at a person, including ourselves, and decide that they are rocky or thorny or a lost cause, and we move on. But the sower doesn't move on. In fact, the sower doesn't even seem to notice that a score could possibly even be kept. Which brings me back to that roadside we drove through. Fire ecologists will tell you that burned ground is not finished ground. It's actually quite far from it. It's a new beginning for the ground. The fire goes through and clears out what was there, yes. But then pioneer plants move in. And these are the hardy, the unglamorous ones, possibly ugly little plants, but they don't need much. They're carried in on the wind or by birds. Perhaps even the same birds that found some seed on a path. And these plants do the thankless work of rebuilding the topsoil, so that eventually something much larger can grow there. Now, it can take years, and sometimes nature needs a little bit of help, someone to carry seed back to ground that is too burned and too far away from anything green to be able to reseed itself. But it happens. The ground was never actually dead. It was only waiting for someone to keep sowing into it, to not give up on it. I don't think that God is especially impressed by our careful, plowed, pre-approved soil. I think God is the one out there in the ash, flinging seeds at rocks past all reasonable judgment, because that is what steadfast love does. It does not wait for us to be ready. It shows up while we are a literal hot mess, still smoldering, and keeps showing up long after everyone has declared the ground a lost cause. So here is my question for you. Where in your life have you already decided that the ground is too scorched to bother with? And what if the sower already walked past there this morning, seeds in hand, aiming for exactly that spot?